Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm William Cooper, and once again, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. This is the broadcast, and I am the man that President Clinton named in a White House memo as being the most dangerous radio host in America. Rush Limbaugh read that memo on the air in order to absolve himself of any of the targeting and the guilt association of the media attack on right-wing radio. He said, and I quote, "See, folks, it's not me. It's this fellow William Cooper out in Arizona broadcasting out of a storefront." Well, he was right about me. He was wrong about the storefront. But it makes no difference, ladies and gentlemen. The reason that I'm the most dangerous radio host in America, according to the socialist in power, is that I tell the truth. I document everything. I give you the sources so that you can go look it up for yourself. And in an era of political correctness, profound propaganda, if propaganda can be profound, and it is if you understand it, and just outright lies, manipulation, deception from every direction, every day, from every source. Americans are bombarded with all of this crap. If you want to know the truth, if you want to be able to go out and look it up for yourself, you listen to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, and you'll be able to do exactly that. And then maybe for once in your entire life, you will know the truth and be able to separate it from the lies, the deceit, the manipulation. You will stop being sheeple, and much to your surprise, and great delight, I might add, you just might become real people. And if you can do that, we have a chance to save freedom. We have a chance to restore constitutional Republican government. And if we can do that, we can save the world. Ladies and gentlemen, when we got wrapped up in this Bosnia thing, President Clinton told us that he had signed the Daytona Accords to commit United States troops for only 1 year, and at the end of that 1 year, they would be coming home. He lied, as he has always done. He is a chronic liar, a deceiver, a manipulator. He is a staunch, along with his wife, Hillary. Together, they formed the first androgynous presidency ever in the United States of America. We call them Billary. He lied to us because the Daytona Accords, ladies and gentlemen, clearly call for a 5-year commitment of the United States troops. 5 years. He also told us that our troops would not be under any NATO command or leadership, that they would not be under any United Nations command or leadership. He lied to us again when he said that, for it is not true, ladies and gentlemen. You see, NATO is just a regional organization of the United Nations. It is the regional security agency known as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, and it was formed pursuant to Chapter 7, Article 52 of the United Nations Charter. In addition, Article 53 states, quote, the Security Council shall, where appropriate, utilize such regional arrangements or agencies for enforcement action under its authority. But no enforcement action shall be taken under regional arrangements or by regional agencies without the authorization of the Security Council, end quote. Were you also aware, ladies and gentlemen, that the Warsaw Pact of the Eastern Bloc communist nations and the Soviet Union was also formed as the regional security agency known as the Warsaw Pact pursuant to Chapter 7, Article 52 of the United Nations Charter? See, we've been scammed big time, ladies and gentlemen, way beyond your conception of what has happened. That's why Article 6 of the Dayton Peace Agreement that sent our troops to Bosnia stipulates that the United Nations Security Council will establish IFOR, the NATO force in Bosnia, acting under Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter. The UN Security Council gets to decide if and when it wishes to use regional agencies like NATO and its American troops, and if it so chooses, it will use them under United Nations authority. And our troops are committed to IFOR in Bosnia for 5 years, not the one that President Clinton told us they were committed for. The NATO alliance was brought into being back in 1949, and its preamble states, and I quote, the parties to this treaty reaffirmed their faith in the purposes and principles of the Charter of the United Nations, end quote. And in case there's any ambiguity about who wears the pants in the United Nations-NATO relationship, the treaty's Article 1 states this, and I'm talking the NATO treaty. Quote, the parties undertake, as set forth in the Charter of the United Nations, to refrain in their international relations from the threat of the use of force in any manner inconsistent with the purposes of the United Nations, end quote. Charles Krauthammer recently wrote openly in his syndicated column that, quote, civilized society should disarm its citizens, end quote. Actually, ladies and gentlemen, his outrageous views are right in line with the United Nations. The Global Bodies Commission on Global Governance, the name alone should tell you something, released its book, quote, Our Global Neighborhood, end quote, recently, which states on page 131, and I quote, we strongly endorse community initiatives to protect individual life, to encourage the disarming of civilians, and to foster an atmosphere of security in neighborhoods, end quote. Well, we never doubted that this was the globocratic agenda, ladies and gentlemen, but to the doubting Thomases, this might serve to open their eyes before Charles Krauthammer and the United Nations police come knocking someday to demand compliance with a voluntary gun give-back program. Our global neighborhood sets up a timetable of sorts by announcing on page 351 that, quote, our recommendation is that the General Assembly should agree to hold a world conference on governance in 1998, with its decisions to be ratified and put into effect by the year 2000. That will allow more than 2 years for the preparatory process, end quote. Notice how very diplomatic, or I should say, democratic it all is. The body's decisions are, quote, to be ratified and put into effect by the year 2000, end quote. It doesn't say if they are ratified. Of course, the preparatory process is just a code word for the engineering of consent from the United Nations would-be global subjects. That's you and I. Now, for those to whom the whole idea of a psyops or psychological operation sounds like bunkum, we offer a recent report from the United States Army War College. Associate Professor Stephen Metz of the college's Strategic Studies Institute and research analyst James Kivett authored The Revolution in Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War on July 25, 1994. These military planners talk of a quantum leap in military technology and capability, which enables a premeditated revolution in military affairs, which they label RMA. Karl Marx, after all, postulated that revolutions can be deliberate rather than inadvertent. Historical change can be created, engineered, and harnessed by those who understand it. This idea led many analysts to assume the current RMA can be the first deliberate one as senior military leaders and strategic thinkers consciously shape the future. That's a direct quote from the report of the U.S. Army War College. The authors raise the issue of such new technologies as high-energy radio frequency, our HERF, H-E-R-F guns, and electromagnetic pulse transformer, our EMP/T-bombs, and advanced techniques of electronic deception, but caution, quote, deception, while frequently of great military or political value, is thought of as somehow un-American, end quote. And I quote directly from the text of the report, quote, American values and attitudes thus form significant constraints on full use of emerging technology, at least in anything short of a perceived war for national survival. Overcoming these constraints to make a RMA in conflict short of war would require fundamental changes in the United States. An ethical and political revolution may be necessary to make a military revolution. End quote. Perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, an ethical and political devolution would be a more appropriate term for this proposed step back into barbarism. These high-level soldier gurus seem impatient with the tired traditional ethics of us unillumined United States of America citizens. And they say this, quote, but there is another alternative. We could deliberately engineer a comprehensive revolution, seeking utter transformation rather than simply an expeditious use of new technology, end quote. Now, are the sweeping changes in military attitudes regarding the United Nations and the New World Order part of this utter transformation? And what kind of technologies could alter something so tangible as attitudes? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you the answer to that question is yes. You see, there could be no New World Order. There could be no one world government. All of the things that are happening in this nation that conflict with the Constitution for the United States of America, and in fact, blatantly subvert it, could not happen without the complicity and consent of the highest echelon and the highest ranking officers of all of the military forces of the United States of America. You see, they are pledged to protect and defend the Constitution for the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and domestic, and domestic, and domestic, and domestic. I know. My father took that oath. My brother took that oath. I took that oath. My grandfather took that oath. His father and his grandfather took that oath. Metz and Kivett note that information technology is more important in conflicts short of war, which are most often won or lost through the manipulation of images, beliefs, attitudes, and perceptions. This makes psychological technology much more important than strike technology. In a revealing reference to psychological operations directed against the public, they write this, quote, ways must be found to use emerging technology, including advanced artificial intelligence and information dissemination systems, to help military strategists develop, implement, and continually improve methods of influencing opinion, mobilizing public support, and sometimes demobilizing it. But ultimate success in applying the RMA to conflict short of war hinges on the development of psychotechnology, end quote. And ladies and gentlemen, develop it they will. In addition to the electronic RMA, the report reveals that, and I quote, the second and potentially more profound RMA is biotechnological, including genetic engineering and advanced behavior-altering drugs, end quote. Despite a smattering of disclaimers, the sky appears to be the limit for these elite military planners so eager to bypass Americans' ethical and moral standards. Now, I'm not making this up, ladies and gentlemen. These are our own military strategic planners writing this stuff. And if you listen to the vast broadcast of the Hour of the Time, where we revealed and exposed the secret mind control experiments, manipulation, and experimentation upon American people, then you know, especially if you looked up the sources and documentation that we gave you, that this is all, this what we're talking about tonight is kindergarten stuff. They're way, way far advanced, way beyond what I'm even hinting at here. The U.S. military has long been involved in psychological operations, but it is important to note its interlock with the bastions of social engineering, the tax-exempt foundations. You see, science of coercion reveals the extensive support from the Rockefeller Foundation and others given to communications research, which focused on what the father of public relations, Edward L. Bernays, called the engineering of consent in his book of the same name. He said, quote, the major foundations, such as the Carnegie Corporation and the Ford Foundation, which were the principal secondary source of large-scale communication research funding of the day, usually operated in close coordination with government propaganda and intelligence programs in allocation of money for mass communication research, end quote. Well, if they were the second or the principal secondary source, who was the principal primary source? Well, ladies and gentlemen, that happens to be the Rockefeller Foundation. Although the United States military was the prime source of taxpayer funds released to the social sciences for psychological warfare-related studies, the targets were often the so-called taxpayers themselves. I quote, other U.S. Army and National Security Council documents from the same Cold War period stress, quote, plausible deniability, end quote, to permit the government to deny responsibility for so-called black operations and the clandestine targeting of the United States population, in addition to that of foreign countries for psychological operations, end quote. You see, that's what all this alien abduction and flying saucer crap is all about. In 1970, John Dewey, the author of our failed educational system, said this in a speech in New York City for the Imperial Japanese delegation headed by Viscount Ishii, and I quote, someone once told me that the best way to unite all humanity in a one-world government and do away with wars forever would be if we were invaded from outer space by some other species from some other planet, end quote. He said that in 1917. Unfortunately, they didn't have the technology or the means to fool the public into believing such a far-fetched scenario at that time. I can assure you, they do today. They are using it on the American and the world population today, and the sheeple are sucking it up hook, line, and sinker. Now, when all this took place and these quotes were made, it was the height of the Cold War. Now, the new realities of the 90s are upon us, ladies and gentlemen, and the U.S. military fancies itself to be in the middle of what Stephen Metz and James Kivitz of the U.S. Army War College have dubbed a revolution in military affairs. But the but for all of their fancy technology, these globalcrats and their hired social engineers have relied on one very basic principle to bring them a continuous string of victories. It is the trump card in every match which is defeating all those who oppose totalitarian world government. That's why you never chalk up any points for the home team. Maureen Heaton, a friend of mine and an octogenarian, who is descended from John Hart, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, has been fighting these globocrats for decades. A few years ago, she reacquainted us with the work of a long-forgotten Army colonel named Tom Hutton. During World War II, he had been a public relations officer with the Flying Tigers in Kunming, China. Heaton wrote, quote, from that vantage point, he observed that something new had been added to the arsenal of war, end quote. And until the 20th century, nine principles of warfare, such as surprise, flexibility, concentration of forces, simplicity, were recognized by military strategists. Hutton observed that the Soviets and Chinese were utilizing what he termed Soviet Principle 10, or SPX, or what is known as the dominant principle. because it can pervade all the others. He called it, ladies and gentlemen, paralysis. Or more specifically, paralysis of the will to resist. His extensive research on the subject showed that the Soviet Union had tested and used SPX on their own population before applying it to their military forces. In essence, the SPX is a psychological warfare principle which states that the enemy must be made to believe that resistance is futile. A similar operation is being conducted in the United States against American citizens, specifically known patriots, patriot leaders, and the militia of the several states and of the United States of America, in order to cull their ranks and frighten, intimidate, scare, if you will, anyone who might pay attention and believe this operation, that resistance to the New World Order, to the destruction of the Constitution for the United States of America, the Bill of Rights, is futile. It is a lie, but try and convince someone who's had it so good, so much of their life. You see, most Americans at heart, ladies and gentlemen, are cowards. That's why they can count upon every opportunity to pat their sons and daughters on the butts and send them off to fight and die in some foreign, godforsaken country that they never heard of and can't find on a map, all the while grinning from ear to ear, touting the patriotism of their children, and at the same time will not stand up in the face of tyranny in their own country. In the first instance, they are cowards in that they send their sons and daughters off to die because they are afraid to take the risk of telling them not to go and being ridiculed by the media, by the press, by their neighbors. And in the second instance, they are afraid, saying, well, it can't happen to me. I'm not going to stick my neck out. Let someone else, let this fellow in Arizona, William Cooper, do it. Let him take care of it. Let these militia folk handle it. I'm not going to risk losing my job or my home. All the while, understanding full well that if things continue as they are going now, they're going to lose everything in the long run. Everything. You all know that. If you even make a cursory, even a very small investigation of the history of socialism and what happens to populations and people when socialists come to power, you will see that you are going to lose everything. You're going to become a slave, in fact, in this socialist system. You'll reach a point where you will pretend to work, the state will pretend to pay you, and you will all drown your sorrows in buckets of vodka, just as the Soviets did for a couple of generations. Why does everybody pretend that everything is okay? Why does everybody look at what's happened in the past and say, well, it happened then, but it can't happen now? The truth is, the socialists never deviate from their routine, their program, their plan, the way they do it. Is always repeated exactly the same way. And usually the people who support them the most and bring them into power, the so-called intelligentsia, the university professors, the journalists, the scientists, are the first ones eliminated when they seize the reins of power. Always. Everybody points to Hitler and the Nazis, and their crimes were great, and they were many. I am not glorifying Hitler. I can assure you of that. He was one of the most heinous criminals in the history of the world. But yet, they never acknowledge the tremendous murder of the Soviet Union, the socialists, and the communist systems. Hitler murdered 6 million people, they say. Many people would argue that number, including many prominent Jewish researchers. But they never talk about the gypsies, the Christians, the blacks, and anyone else who would not conform to the new socialist order. in Germany. You see, Nazi means National Socialism. They tried to pretend that Hitler was on the right wing. Hitler was not on the right, he was on the left. He was a liberal, he was a socialist, he was a Nazi. National Socialist German Workers' Party. Why do you let them get away with that? And why is it that everyone ignores that while Hitler may have killed 6 million in Europe, Stalin, Khrushchev, Gorbachev, oh yes, Gorby, when he was head of the Soviet Union, was still in charge of the murders in the Soviet Union and the labor camps in Siberia. Why do you all want to kiss him and tell him how great he is? He's not great. He's a criminal. He's a murderer. He's a scum-sucking, socialist, puke-faced pig, and that's the truth. If you read his book, Perestroika, he will tell you that the fall of the Soviet Union was a scam to disarm the West. And it's working, isn't it? He quotes Lenin, democracy, democracy. Democracy, ladies and gentlemen, is to socialist, peace is defined as the opposition. Excuse me. Peace is defined as the elimination of all opposition to socialism. You see, I'm not making this all up. You can read it in the writings of the socialists themselves. That's a direct quote from V.I. Lenin, the orchestrator of the Bolshevik Revolution. How many people were killed by the Soviet Union that nobody talks about? Why are you still railing on Hitler and all of these other petty little guys compared to the Soviet Union? They're nothing. Nothing compared to Stalin. They're nothing. They're Sunday school kids sitting under a tree in the park. Because the Soviets, ladies and gentlemen, didn't just murder 6 million people. They have murdered over 100 million people. Easily. And I'm being very conservative in my count. You know why they don't? They vilify Hitler as being on the right when in fact he was a socialist, clearly existing on the left, in order to demonize anyone who is truly on the right, who truly stands up for the freedom of all people. Because that's where the light really shines for freedom, is on the right. You see, the scale measures on the left total control by the state of everyone and everything, ownership of everyone and everything by the state, where the state is more important than anything else. And all the way on the right is the total absence of control. It's called anarchy. Both extremes are just as bad. But as you go more right from left, you're going into areas and people who want less and less control and more freedom. A constitutional Republican government lies somewhere just to the right of center on this scale, and that's where I stand, and that's where you should stand if you are truly an American. You see, this new world order that's coming, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be so much worse than Hitler and the Soviet Union and all the Stalins and Khrushchevs and Gorbachevs and Castros of the world ever could have been. They say power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. You see, we've never had a dictator of the world before. We've never had someone anywhere who had the entire power of the world in his hands. And I'm telling you now, that is where we're going, and that is what is coming unless you wake up. You see, the American people, the only ones who can stop this, the only ones in the world, they're the only ones who can still have broadcasts like this, who can still seek out somehow and find some semblance of the truth. They are the only people in the world who are still armed and who still can stand up and form militias and protect their freedoms. And that's why the socialists are so keen and have amassed such organizations and such great propaganda campaigns to disarm the American people. Because there can be no one-world totalitarian socialist government if Americans retain the right to keep their guns. And you'd better understand that. Thank you. Tuned in, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the man whom President Clinton named in a White House memo as the most dangerous radio host in America. Rush Limbaugh, in order to get the critics off his back, read that memo on the air. Why am I the most dangerous radio host in America? It's because I tell the truth. I don't care who it hurts or helps. I tell the truth. I tell it like it is. I document it. I source it. I stick it in your face. And then you must deal with it. Even a cursory review of the events in the world scene today, ladies and gentlemen, might suggest to you that resistance is indeed futile, that the globocrats are omnipotent, and that those who oppose them are hopelessly outfunded, outsmarted, and outgunned. And this is not true, and in upcoming broadcasts I will prove that to you. If it was true, how come they got their butts beat in Somalia by a bunch of people who communicated with CB radios that they couldn't even find? And I'm not telling you that it was nice or wonderful or that it was good to see our people beat. I'm telling you our people should never have been there in the first place. They're not omnipotent. The greatest technological military force in the world was beaten by people with old rifles and CB radios. One of the greatest military machines in the world, the Soviet Union, was beaten in Afghanistan by a bunch of people with a very rudimentary education, but the will to fight. Old rifles, old technology, no armor, no airplanes, kicked their butts. So this is an illusion that they cannot be beat, and nobody, no army in the history of the world has ever faced an angry American patriot populace on their own soil. And I'm telling you, that will be a terrible thing to see. There's not an army in this world, upon the face of this earth, that can defeat 100 million armed, angry, freedom-loving Americans. And that is the truth. That's the hard truth that these traitors are going to have to face one of these days, and it's not far off in the future. They will instigate it. They will start it. And I guarantee you, we will meet the challenge, and we will finish it. And we will restore constitutional Republican government, freedom to America and to the world. You see, this is just another SPX tactic, and it's based on maintaining and strengthening this perception among the people who, if they didn't know any better, might all stand up and resist in unison. And if that happened, this would all be over tomorrow. It might be over before midnight tonight, if that were to happen. Rather, those who would resist must be led to believe that they are isolated in their convictions and surrounded by apathetic, cowardly fools or worse. And that's not true. In addition, the tremendous amount of information now available about the globocratic advance is overwhelming to most. Many people become paralyzed by the information and demoralized by the constant stream of bad news because when they finally discover what is happening, it hits them like a ton of bricks, and it doesn't stop. Only the strong survive. Americans throughout their history have been strong, pioneering people, and they will survive. The weak will fall by the wayside, as they have always done throughout the history of the world. And there is no cause to whimper for them, for they chose to be weak. Fostering this perception of futility is the tendency of the independent press, especially some of the patriot media, to constantly overstate the seriousness of the situation. Thus, martial law, or Armageddon, is always just around the corner. To read these things off the Patriots Facts Network and from the militia of Montana and from all of these other ridiculous publications that spread rumor, innuendo, disinformation, and outright lies is a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. All you have to do is pick up a telephone or do an hour's research in any library in the country to validate most of what they have or to determine that it is indeed false. In a recent poll that we did, by gathering up all of this stuff that's being passed around from hand to hand and mouth to mouth, most of it sheer idiocy, and by doing the research required and necessary, we determined, ladies and gentlemen, that in excess of 95% of all of the information passed from hand to hand, mouth to mouth, through the so-called patriot militia community is false, phony, fraudulent, just outright BS, if you want to know the truth. And that must stop. Must stop. You see, what better vulnerability for the media and intelligence psychological warfare specialists than the current conviction by so many Americans that we are approaching the end times? Where does that come from? Do you really think the earth is going to end? Do you really think the universe is going to come to an end? That the sun is going to go out one day right on schedule because you believe it's going to? Oh, they want you to believe that, all right. They foster these things. They create incidents that make you believe that this is the end times, when the Bible makes no such statement at all. See, the Bible talks about the end of the age. The original translation from the Greek is aeon. The Bible clearly states that this age will end and a new age will begin. And how could you possibly believe all this crap being spouted from pulpits across the country and around the world that this is going to be the end of the world? The Bible doesn't say that. It says it's going to be the end of an age. It can't be the end of the world if Christ is supposed to come back, if you're a Christian, if you believe what it says in the Bible. It says that Christ is going to come back here to this earth, establish a new Jerusalem, and rule on this earth for 1,000 more years. Where do you get this end times crap? What's the matter with you? Why do you just listen so stupidly to these people who spout nonsense at you when all you have to do is pick up the book and read it? But you see, the powers that be want you to believe that this is going to be the end so you will not resist the tyranny that's coming. Do you really think that God would want you to sit back and do nothing while evil takes over the earth? I don't believe that. Not for a moment. I believe God wants us to do what is right in all instances, no matter what. And the right thing is always to oppose tyranny. You see, that's just a cop-out. Oh, I'm not going to risk my neck. I'm not going to get involved in this because I know the end times are coming and it's being brought about by the hand of God. And who am I to resist the hand of God? Well, you'll find out. That's all I can tell you. Because I can tell you, if you really believe that, you're a fool. You are a fool. And if you think that you can stand there and watch terrible things happen to your family and your loved ones and your children and not do anything about it, and try and justify your inaction to me because it's being brought about by the hand of God, I'm going to call you a coward to your face. And if the enemy doesn't get rid of you, I might do it. Some of these beliefs and some of these excuses and some of these ridiculous reasons for the justification of the total lack of responsibility and action on the part of many Americans is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. it's a cop-out. Whatever your excuse, it's a cop-out. And most of you listen to this broadcast, you know I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to the sheeple. The ignorant, apathetic, and in many cases stupid couch potatoes who throughout the history of the world, when any conflict has taken place, have always been the flotsam and jetsam cast about by the seas of battle at the mercy of the victor, whoever that might be, and of circumstance. And they usually suffer the most because they sat on the fence or they chose the wrong side because it was easier. You see, whether we are not in the end times, and I can guarantee you we are not, insofar as this perception adds to the paralysis of the will, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. How many Christians in this country have been effectively neutralized by their belief that the end is near? You know, my grandmother taught me to have common sense, and I find that it's rare today that anyone has common sense. The argument is, why bother to resist that which mortal man cannot prevent from coming to pass? Whether the argument is sound or not, the fact is that many use it to explain their disastrous inaction in what should be an all-out political fight to preserve our basic freedoms. It is a cop-out. It is a lie. It is cowardly. The antidote to this formidable principle is simply to begin focusing on the good news, ladies and gentlemen, while remaining informed of the reality of the situation, which is the bad news. Those who still have no idea that there is anything wrong need solid doses of the latter, whereas those fighting in the ideological trenches are sadly in need of the former. Any development of forward momentum for the supporters of the Constitution and freedom would tend to short-circuit the entire SPX psychological warfare strategy and bring it to a screeching halt. Developing this forward momentum takes work. It takes work, luck, and yes, maybe even a little divine intervention, and a hell of a lot of risk. But nothing that's ever worth fighting for, ladies and gentlemen, has ever been without risk. If the United Nations is to become the policeman of the world, and that's not an if, really, because they are the policeman of the world today, and our armed forces is the police force for that policeman. But if the UN is to become the policeman of the world and to have its policemen all over the world, we are all going to have to get used to it first. There are a few more powerful instruments for subtle, painless propagandizing of mass populations than motion pictures and television. For instance, in the 1994 made-for-television movie Death Train, Patrick Stewart plays Malcolm Philpott of the United Nations Anti-Crime Unit, or UNACO. He arrives on the scene of a terrorist incident in Germany when he is told by the German policeman, Captain Wolf, that he can observe from over there. Philpott bristles, saying, "Excuse me, what is your name?" The German police chief introduces himself, after which Philpott states, "Captain Wolf, I understand your reluctance to relinquish command, but if you confer with your superiors, you'll find that I have been authorized to lead this response." The stunned Captain Wolf asks, "Since when do you people tell a German anything on his own soil?" Philpott's pixie young American aide then chirps, "Since 2 a.m. The UN policeman then begins barking out orders to the German personnel in the room, who dutifully follow them. Wolf protests, "These are German hostages. It is our problem." Philpott to an assistant, "Miss Carver, patch me through to New York." To Wolf, "There is a crucial piece of information that you don't know. The hijackers may have an atomic bomb on the train." The shocked Captain Wolf then receives a call from his superior, after which he submits to the United Nations officer. Now, this is just one little example. It's not a blockbuster film, but it serves as an illustration of the kind of blatant conditioning directed at the mushy minds of Americans. Unless people learn to spot such psycho-political ploys, they will continue to be unaware of how their convictions were generated, and I guarantee you, they were generated. Most people alive today have never had an original thought in their entire life. And that brings us to the end of another broadcast of the Hour of the Time. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. I hope that I have made a difference. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you. This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 low-power FM stations across the nation and around the world. Stay tuned now for Michael Cottingham with Quest for Help. Thank you.